Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. For the past 3 years, Smart Growth Tulsa has been an advocacy voice for development that makes Tulsa more livable, sustainable, and economically viable. From its beginnings, advocating for a fairly simple improvement, a sidewalk on Riverside to connect to the gathering place, to its opposition to city sales tax to pay for proposed low water dams in Sand Springs or Bixby, to creating an online participatory budgeting process for the latest Vision Vote projects. This grassroots advocacy group has been involved in a number of projects that advocate smart growth in Tulsa. Now the group is transitioning from an activist group to a full nonprofit organization devoted to smart growth public policies. I'm joined today by Bill Leidy, the executive director of Smart Growth Tulsa, to talk about the changes in the organization and what they'll be working for in the next few years for Tulsa. Bill Leidy, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, it's a pleasure indeed and an honor, and thank you for the invite.
Smart Growth Tulsa has been, for the last few years, sort of an activist group, a group of people who are interested in smart growth policies. Now you're transitioning into a full-blown nonprofit organization devoted to advocating for smart growth policies. What do we mean by smart growth?
Basically, it's about using your existing infrastructure and creating walkable neighborhoods and pockets of density where people can live and work and play and reduce the reliance on the automobile, improve health outcomes, and things like that. So it's land use and zoning, and it's transportation. It's health and public safety, but we're also involved in social justice issues now, criminal justice issues. We are for preservation of parks and open space, protecting and funding those properly, and we're also advocating regularly for good public schools and public education and for arts and culture as well.
So it sounds like it's a whole range of
it is.
But when I think of smart growth, I think of it as the process in which cities become less reliant on the automobile, first and foremost, and building up density, especially for your Midwestern cities that are really spread out.
That's true.
With usually inadequate transportation where the only way to get around effectively is an automobile. Is that going to be first and foremost on
that will probably always be our primary and main focus. Advocating for smart policies in the creation of the public realm in particular. Our streets, our roads, these are the biggest part of the city-owned property. They are the anchor for a lot of private development. And so we want to make sure that when we do new development that we have proper infrastructure in place to encourage the kind of sense of place that creates excitement and interest and vitality in the community. And so that requires a kind of a watchdog to make sure that our elected officials and our private real estate developers are aware of our plan, our comprehensive plan, and Planet Tulsa. And
well, let me ask you about Planet Tulsa for a moment. That had really unprecedented public involvement in its creation. How closely does it hew to the policies of smart growth?
Well, very much in line with the policies of smart growth.
And, a lot of the modal things where you have modes of development on corners, neighborhoods are basically the foot traffic is going out from the neighborhoods to a sort of intersection modal sort of development area, right?
That's right. And the ideas of density, although there are some people out there who would like to see Tulsa actually de-annex some of the land, we went from around, 60 square miles to 200 square miles in an annexation that took us from the 19th most densely populated city in the United States to in the 280th or something like that in one day. So that created a massive amount of new infrastructure, which has in the end created an enormous amount of burden on the population to support something that is problematic. And with the funding challenges that we have now, declining sales taxes and so on, the idea of building those density locations is contrary to a couple of things that are going on right now. I'll just comment on briefly is all the talk and the hype about the Gilcrease Expressway. You know, the local Metro Chamber has been a huge fan of that. Other groups and businesses have, advocated for that. It was actually conceived in the 50s, but there are a number of people, enlightened people, people who are guided by, you know, what is going on globally to reduce the reliance on automobiles and vehicular traffic. We've got the onset of autonomous vehicles. We have the maker movement now where products are being manufactured locally, and that will reduce the amount of freight demand for highways and so on. So while there are, you know, some benefits maybe from that, it's going to create additional need for infrastructure, for right-of-way maintenance, for curbs and sidewalks, for lighting, for other things that are going to come in.
Isn't that northwest quadrant sort of the area of that 200 square miles that really hasn't been developed, that the city of Tulsa would become part of the city of Tulsa if it were developed?
I don't know the exact boundaries, but yes, I believe you are correct.
And I think from a city standpoint, when you see further development in Bixby, Glenpool, towards Coweta and Wagner, they're rightly looking, where's the place where we can develop more property tax, city tax, and that would be the northwest quadrant, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, we have a burgeoning downtown that has really taken off in the last few years. There are enormous opportunities. There's all this surface parking that could be converted to development opportunities for housing, for retail, for office. So I think we ought to be leveraging what we already have and not so much looking to expand and to grow into green fields and areas that are less developed.
So the Gilcrease Expressway is one area where you say this is sort of contrary to what the city has been sort of looking at in the comprehensive plan.
It is extremely contrary to
okay.
that.
Okay. So what you mentioned another area as well. You were going to mention another area.
You mentioned suburban communities, mm-hmm. and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I think the day of reckoning for some of these suburban communities who are growing and growing and growing and building out and annexing land and developing out on the outskirts, that is going to come home to them kind of like it has to Tulsa. And so Broken Arrow, Owosso, some of these suburban communities are creating, you know, infrastructure that it's going to be difficult for them to maintain, providing incentives to businesses to locate there. And
I was noticing Broken Arrow is actually trying to develop their main street and actually doing quite well in their main street.
Very well.
But really trying to build up their density, it looks like.
Yeah,
they're beginning that effort.
I think they are, but then they're also expanding by leaps and bounds into undeveloped green fields. And I know they have planning departments, and I know that they have people, but it's all about really trying to, particularly the sales tax thing, as long as cities are reliant upon that as their only source of operating money to fund their public services, there's going to be a scramble. But as we know, brick-and-mortar retail is on the decline. We've got Macy's closing. We've got Sears closing. We've got Toys R Us closing. We've got Gander Mountain. It looks like they may be closing. I mean, this is going on all across the country, and pretty soon you're going to be having packages delivered to your door by a drone. And so,
maybe.
You know, the whole idea of the retail brick and mortar, particularly the big box stores, is in decline. And so all of the movement, any movement to really try to attract that kind of sales tax revenue, I think is going to be a pretty short-lived experience. And it's going to have a minimal impact in later years.
Yet, you know, even though you mentioned this, still in certain areas of the city which are developing, you're seeing more and more of these big box retailers being built. Is that something the city should be looking at? I mean, when you look at parts of the city where at one point it was thought that this was going to be a growth area and, you put a big brick and mortar single-use department store or a big overall store, you see them still sitting empty years later, and the adaptive reuse of those buildings is a hard thing to come by.
It's
you've
really
seen a few that have manage to do that, right. But it's pretty tough.
Well,
isn't
I don't
it?
Know that we could really, by ordinance, prohibit people from building a big box store if that's what they want. But I think we could do more to incentivize the smaller businesses and to protect and nurture the entrepreneurial efforts and small businesses and the mom and pop operations and the neighborhood, the true neighborhood operations and the service oriented businesses that you don't get in a big box store. So I think we need to look at ways to try to incentivize those types of businesses and not, discourage as much as possible the new suburban development and use the existing infrastructure that we have to try to create some pockets of density around the city.
My guest today is Bill Leidy. He's the executive director of Smart Growth Tulsa. Smart Growth Tulsa is transitioning from an activist group to a full nonprofit organization devoted to smart growth public policies, and he joins me today on Studio Tulsa. So what is the focus as a nonprofit? What would be the focus of the organization? What are the immediate focus areas for your organization?
So we started 3 years ago, and in 2016, in February, we incorporated as a 501c4. We spent the better part of the entire year getting our act together and establishing our articles of incorporation, our bylaws, creating our vision for Tulsa, which is we envision an equitable, resilient, connected, and flourishing community. And from that vision, we spent a good deal of time shaping our mission statement, which is to advocate and shape smart public policy. And so we have areas of focus, zoning and land use, transportation and mobility, health and public safety, social justice, parks and open spaces, arts and culture and public education.
Yeah.
Those are things that we routinely.
But what's the first big issue? I mean, for your organization
right now,
today?
It's crunch time, basically, Rich. It's crunch time for Smart Growth Tulsa. We have had a lot of success in helping to shape smart public policy and a number of things. And it kind of began with the Riverside Sidewalk serving a gathering place. Right after we formed our group, we made the case that that was an important thing, that the previous mayor wanted to abandon the idea of having a sidewalk there along Riverside Drive serving as an entrance to a gathering place. And, we had an enormous amount of support for that. We filled up the Garden Center for a meeting of about 300 people who showed up to fight for the right for citizens to have that sidewalk there. So that was one of the original things. But we've advocated for a number of things, but it's been kind of a hand-to-mouth thing. We've been self-funded. It's all volunteer. There's been no paid staff. We have had a few contributions, but basically we haven't had the resources to really do projects and programs that we think could benefit the city. So we are transitioning from that activist organization to a true nonprofit, and we're anxious to see whether the community has an appetite to support us and if they feel like we have brought value to the community in the efforts that we have had. We've advocated for Tulsa to get connected to the nation's rail network by supporting the connection between Oklahoma City and Tulsa. Vision funding for the multimodal facility downtown was one of the things that we advocated for. Dedicated funding for transit, the first ever in the state of Oklahoma. We played a role in helping the community understand, and we supported Councillor Ewing, who was kind of the standard bearer for transportation in the Vision Project. We've made regular recommendations to the city and the city council on zoning code update and the RDO, the River Design Overlay update. We held the first ever community public participatory budgeting process. We had an online survey that helped analyze all of the different projects that were proposed for Vision extension. And so that was the first. And so that is something that we are also doing. But we need to transition now to a full staffed nonprofit organization, have an office and have some space and have some administrative assistance and overhead. So we're actually introducing for the first time ever a fundraising campaign. People can visit our website at smartgrowtulsa.org. There are a number of options there for people to contribute and to help support us. We're not just looking for money, although we need money, but we're also looking for in-kind contributions, people who have ideas that they want to share with us that might help the city of Tulsa be a smarter city, a more sustainable community. And so, you know, now it's crunch time. As I say, we've got to see what people are going to say. Are they going to support us?
My guest today is Bill Leidy, the executive director of Smart Growth Tulsa, which is transitioning into a full nonprofit organization. And Bill, you mentioned some of the projects you've been involved with, but where do you see the immediate focus for Smart Growth Tulsa, say today and for the next year or two, as far as how you affect public policy?
Well, there are three projects that we identified for the year 2017. One of those was transparency in governance. And so we are trying to work with the administration and the city council to ensure that the citizens of Tulsa have the benefit of a good notification on the agendas and the meetings for the authorities, boards, and commissions. And sometimes those have been hard to find. And so we're looking for, and the new city website, I think, has done a good job of bringing a lot of that to the attention of people and finding good access. So
let me ask you about when you have zoning changes and things like this. This goes before a commission that usually meets in the middle of the day. And as you well know, when a developer is looking for some sort of amendment to the zoning code, if they see opposition in the room, they ask to table it. And it becomes a war of attrition. Are you working on anything to change that where it's a matter of, you know, a group wearing down the opposition to a change through tabling, where these people have to take off work to come down during the day? Is there any notion of having these meetings at the end of the day?
You brought up a really good point. And in many cities, the Planning Commission meetings are in the evenings. And I served 5 years on the Tulsa Metropolitan Planning Commission, including some time as chair of the TMAPC. And we discussed this on numerous times, and we just couldn't get the support that we needed to move to an evening meeting.
When you talk about transparency and governance, isn't that a sort of
it a, is? And most recently, the city council, their first meeting was at, what was it? It was like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon when they were asking for citizen input on the decision whether or not to abandon the park use of Helmreich Park. Well, I think the meeting was rather hastily called. There wasn't much notice given for it. So, you know, it's they have to expect that there's going to be a certain amount of criticism. Whether or not we can advocate for actually getting meetings in the evening, I don't know. But it's something that we believe in and we would like to see it.
Well, at the very least, and as you well know from your time on the commission, when there was opposition to a zoning change, a lot of times the persons advocating for the zoning change would say, we need to table this for another week or till the next meeting. It seems like that ought to be common sense. When it's on the agenda, it should be on the agenda.
Well, so one of the things that Smart Growth Tulsa attempts to do is to be a watchdog and to work with neighborhood associations and those that are affected by land use decisions. You know, quite honestly, when I first came on the Planning Commission, I really didn't quite understand. I was a gung-ho real estate background guy who wanted to see that, and I thought all development or new development was good, and that it didn't take me long to figure that out.
And there's a lot of development that's good.
There is some. Mm-hmm. But you know, the idea. One of the things that Mayor Bynum, when he was campaigning and running for office, was talking about raising the bar and setting higher expectations and having higher standards for development. And those come through land use regulations and zoning, but you're so right. The development community has lawyers. They have deep pockets. They have political influence, and so they have their own agenda. And we don't have any problems with that. That's what they do. They're businessmen, and they have a right to advocate for their own ends. But the neighborhood's at a disadvantage because they don't have that relationship, that ongoing relationship with staff They don't have the money. They don't have lawyers. They don't have oftentimes even the ability to get the information that they need to help ward off inappropriate development that might adversely affect their neighborhood. So we have worked with some of the neighborhood associations, and most recently you remember the OWL controversy where a couple of duplexes were torn down by the owners, which happened to be a church in the Midtown, in a Midtown neighborhood. And so they kind of got the cart before the horse. They went before the Board of Adjustment asking for, that they be able to use this property for parking. So it was one of those things exactly like you talked about, where a bunch of people showed up and were against it, and then they postponed the meeting and continued it and so on. And so we played some role in helping advise the neighborhood and some of the people who lived there about what their rights were and where they could go to, you know, to try to help preserve their neighborhood that they had. So that is the role that we're trying to play.
Transparency and governance. What are some of the other things you've identified for this year to focus on?
Well, we also are working on a project for the 61st and Peoria area that is of high has high poverty levels, is high crime. There is a plan in the works to improve the street from Peoria, from 61st Street down to where it connects to Riverside Drive. And also, as you know, the BRT, the Bus Rapid Transit System, will be serving that area. And so Planet Tulsa called for the review of all of the small area plans that had been adopted before Planet Tulsa was adopted. And so over the past few years, the planning staff has been reviewing those, and they determined that several of those needed to be revisited. And so that is one of them. But it is the timing on how when the resources will be available for planning staff to actually have some organizational meetings and get the engagement from the public. So we're trying to play a role in helping come up with an integrated plan. One of the things that we are trying to do is to get a community garden there at 61st in Peoria area on some privately owned land. Actually, one of our advisory board members who has agreed to help out. And so we want to get the community involved. We would like to get people out, get some exercise, and learn how to grow some good vegetables and create a community. So that is as a second one. So
okay, and the third one?
So one of our advisory board members was appointed by the mayor to serve on the Mayor's Commission on Community Policing. They have just finished up their work, and they are going to be making their recommendations, and then the administration will be reviewing those and determining a course of action. But the idea of community policing was introduced in Tulsa some years ago. There's some controversy associated with it. Our position on community policing is that if we would have stuck with it back when Drew Diamond was actually the police chief, we would be in a lot better shape today. But he didn't have the support of the elected officials back when he was the police chief. But he is one of the noted experts in the United States. He speaks all over. He's written about it. He's published, you know, books and articles about community policing. But so I applaud the mayor for finally calling for this commission on community policing. During the campaign, we met with him several times with a group of people who were interested in that. So the idea of social justice and getting officers in the neighborhoods, this gentleman, the police officer who is now through a federal grant, I believe, is working in the Riverwood area at 61st and Peoria, has made a huge difference in just a very short period of time. And I think people, when they see that, it's building trusting relationships, you know, so where people are not afraid to share information about illegal or illicit activities that might be going on. And so that is so important. And as we bring on these 160 new officers that will be funded through the permanent public safety tax that envision, we want to make sure that they are trained to help de-escalate violent situations before they become necessary for the use of lethal force, for instance. And so that's an important thing for us. We're trying to play a role in helping the city come up with constructive policy on community policing.
In our last couple of minutes, I know Smart Growth Tulsa was involved in the Helmerich Park dispute. You weren't a party to the lawsuit, but you were a party that voiced their opinion about the idea of the development at 71st and Riverside. Given what's transpired with the redesign of the development somewhat, going through the city council to abandon the parkland, what is your group's opinion of this?
I appreciate you bringing that up because I do want to comment on it, but I also want to make sure that your audience and the listeners today understand that Smart Growth Tulsa is not defined by that alone. We have supported the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, and we considered at one point actually being a party to the lawsuit, which we chose not to. So because it's in the news, and as I go around town, people always ask me about that. Well, what about Helmerich Park? Well, Helmerich Park is just a small thing that we have taken a position on, a formal position supporting. But in terms of the city council's decision, we think it was an error. It was a miscalculation. I believe it was driven by fear of a lawsuit from the developers, fear of getting a bad reputation among real estate developers. And that's not to be dismissed. There is a concern. But there was a promise made. When that property was purchased, there was a promise made that that would be for park use. And so,
even though development has been sort of a part of that, scheduled for that area and a lot of the corridor plans and overlays.
I think it has been, yes, but have the average citizen in Tulsa really weighed in on that? And I say no, I don't think so. And so the overwhelming number of people who have commented on this issue have been opposed to a high-intensity retail. We have 200 square miles. We have abandoned buildings everywhere. Everyone would like to have an REI store. Everyone would like to have an REI store in Tulsa. But let's do it. How about the Spaghetti Warehouse? The Spaghetti Warehouse is going out of business. There's a great, huge, big historic building in the Brady District that I think would be ideal. There could be a number of other places that we could put an REI store, but we're against the idea of the city council abandoning this for park use, and we think it's a mistake, and it's not over.
Well, Bill Leidy, we appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bill Leidy is the executive director of Smart Growth Tulsa. For more information, visit their website at smartgrowthtulsa.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.